Good afternoon. It's good to be with you. I bring you greetings from Oklahoma, that neighbor, neighboring state, who is also a little bit on the conservative side in terms of providing youth with their rights and something we are working toward. I'm a researcher by training, and that's what I love doing. I love trying to find evidence behind what's out there, what works, what we should be learning about what's happening in schools and in the community, and what we can do about those things that will help youth have the maximum opportunity to grow and develop their native-born talents. And part of the projects I'm going to talk to you about today are from that philosophy. These are our investigators. We have a team. We've been together now about 10 years. We've been working on different levels of this project, so I'll talk about a wonderful team to work with, I'll tell you that. There are two more posters that from our research that are tomorrow afternoon, so look them up. Youth Asset Study, you'll be able to find them. When we talk about youth assets, and you really have to come up with a definition, and this is the one we're working with right now. It may change across time, but to think about everything it is, the attitudes, the knowledge, values, skills, relationships, anything that strengthens that youth's ability to become healthy, capable, and responsible as an adult. And all of those facets are really clearly important to what will make the child have the opportunity to make the best decisions, maybe to abstain from sexual intercourse until they're ready to take on responsibilities of parenting. All of those things are possible. They're just not guaranteed. And so what we have to work as a community to work on both sides of that issue. The Youth Asset Study really is a secondary study coming out of the original study that was started in about 10, 11 years ago, talking about the healthy, empowered, and responsible teens of Oklahoma City. And this was done by the Oklahoma Institute for Child Advocacy. And through a community engagement project and through a process that went on for several months, almost into a year, we identified originally 9 essential youth assets that our community members thought were really essential for every youth to have as a part of their growth and development. And then as a part of the research project and developing all of those things into the reality of what they really would mean, we surveyed 1,350 youth parent pairs, and we asked them about their youth assets, their risk behaviors, what the parents thought about their community, how supportive it was of them and their families, how safe it was, how they felt about that community. And then we also looked at demographic factors. That study compared, and we've published about that a number of articles that are out in the literature regarding those findings. What we realized out of that study, because it was a snapshot, we actually compared 2 cities, Oklahoma City and Tulsa, we really needed to look longitudinally to see what happens. You know, when do assets emerge and how protective are they for particular risk behaviors? At what age do they come and stay, or do they leave, and what do we know? We just don't know that much about assets, and we felt that was really essential, and so did the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, because they have funded us for all of this time, to find out exactly how these assets and the relationships among them could be protective for youth risk behaviors, and certainly how that would react within the environmental and demographic characteristics also that were a part of these children's youth lives. The technical parts of this, we looked at census tracts because we wanted to have a broader range of socioeconomic status groups. When we originally started, we were looking at zip codes that had high teen birth rates. That's where we started. We thought, let's go where the problem is largest and see what we can find out. But for the YAS study, the Youth Asset Study, we decided we really needed a much broader look at youth, not only those in homes who are in lower socioeconomic groups, but also those in higher socioeconomic groups to see were there differences and how did those communities impact upon the youth and then the risk behaviors they were participating in. So this was our plan, and as you know, all plans don't exactly come to fruition. So we, partly because of where Hispanics have moved into Oklahoma City, the areas, we could not define specific areas using census tract data to find those that had both lower and higher socioeconomic status, so we ended up with one census group area for them. For the others, we were able to find, and we came pretty close. We were pretty satisfied with what happened. Part of the process of defining who is in each of these census tracts, we had to go and look at every single building in those targeted census tracts. And as if you've ever done the windshield tours, when you drive through neighborhoods and find out, I see some smiles, yeah, this is fun stuff. This is what research is all about. It's getting out there and really finding out. You have to know, is this truly a building? Is this a home? Is it a business? What is it? You go out there and you find out. So everything is enumerated. And then finally, there's a determination made for every single household or for every single building in that particular census tract, having to do with whether or not we completed the interview, whether there was no youth in that residence, or whether they said no, and of course some did, and then whether or not the house was inhabited or not. These are the assets that we started with on the left side of the screen when you look at those nine original ones. And then we expanded those in the youth asset study to get a total of 17 assets that we really wanted to study. And we developed this instrument ourselves. We started with items that we believed would measure these particular constructs, and then we tested them, pre-tested them, field-tested them again, and then through the years we really worked hard to come up with an instrument that will measure these youth assets as we have conceptualized them, and that probably is the largest issue in the measurement of the concept of youth assets, is how you conceptualize those clearly makes a difference. But we looked at a number of risk behaviors, certainly tobacco use, alcohol use, drug use, sexual intercourse ever, whether or not they had carried weapons to school, physical fighting, and whether they'd ever been arrested, and whether or not they had been picked up for truancy in the past 30 days. So these are the risk behaviors that we felt were important. Originally, we had probably just one item for risk behavior, or maybe two, but we've expanded that across time and have much more complex measures of risk behaviors now than we did originally. Our process was to interview one parent and one teenager from each household. Now, I don't know about your household, but getting a parent and a teenager in the same place at the same time is not an easy task, and especially for researchers trying to collect this data. It was really a very difficult thing. But we recognized we really needed both of those perspectives, and so we interviewed them at the same time, but in separate rooms of the home, primarily because we are asking these youth very serious risk behavior questions for which we wanted to protect their privacy. And so we used computer-based interviewing for the asset questions, and then when it was time to answer those very sensitive risk behaviors, we simply turned the computer around and then the youth completed those items by themselves while their parents were being interviewed, so they couldn't hear what was going on. So that was method in our madness, we think. Because they had headphones and they could absolutely listen to the items, we didn't have to worry about reading abilities, and we felt we measured everyone fairly validly in that way. When we think about school and school connectedness, there is some work out there, and we were talking earlier, yes, and some people from Hopkins presented some last year at APHA regarding the fact that clearly if you are connected with your school, you're much less likely to be involved in any of these risk behaviors. And when you think about it, it makes logical sense, and I think as most asset and related kinds of things do make really good common sense. But to think about what's the theory that might be driving this, when you think about is it social support? I mean, that's where they go every single day. Somebody there needs to be aware of who they are and why they're there, welcoming them as a part of their participation in the school. And when we believe those things happen, it probably is along those lines of social support or belongingness, and then ultimately engagement. Because as youth become more involved and engaged in school, and particularly it might actually end up being the extracurricular activities that often engage kids, and it makes them much more responsive and protective of their own bodies if they really wish to participate in those kinds of activities. So when we think about it, the two of our assets that we had really lent support to those theory, the idea of social support, belongingness, and so we decided to explore that, and that's what the data I'm going to report on today. Across the years, though, since 1992, teen births were on the rise starting in 06. They had been on a steady decline, and now they've begun to rise again. And we're not sure why that has happened, but clearly it's something that we're going to be looking at, as many others are in the nation as well. The specific questions we're asking of this data have to do, what is the relationship between school-related assets, such as for us, we call them school connectedness, and the non-parental adult role models, and whether or not youth decided to delay sexual intercourse. And then the other question we ask, are there important interactions among these school-related assets and demographic characteristics that also may contribute to youth decision to delay sexual intercourse? These are the scales that we use for non-parental adult role models and for school connectedness. You see that the relationship among these, again, for non-parental adult role models, there is a question that actually said there is an adult at your school who is concerned about your well-being. Think about that. Someone really that they know when they go to school that someone cares about them and cares about their well-being. The questions related to school connectedness clearly are those that you've probably seen before. Whether or not the student feels as if school is a good place for him or her. These are our demographics. We had about 47% males and 53% females. We chose by random. If we had the choice of who to interview in the house, if there was more than one teen, we selected them at random. If we had the choice between a mother and a father, we always selected the father, primarily because it's like 90% or almost 90% mothers who were there to be interviewed or who were willing to be interviewed. So we tried to bias it, at least in the selection process, when we could, if we had the opportunity to interview a father. Race, ethnicity, and again, this is Oklahoma City, and so we have, this is not the reflection of what Oklahoma City is like, but we had done this intentionally, as I showed you first, to see if we could get a racial, ethnic group that we could make comments about. These are the areas of parental income that we divided so that we could look at different ranges of income. And for some parts of the country, Oklahoma has a very, very low cost of living, and so therefore the incomes would be lower there probably than in many other places. We had 70%, however, two-parent households, which I think is quite amazing. It was very different from our first sample from the Heart of OKC project, where that was much, much lower. And then the fact that we had 28% who had at least one bachelor's degree. When you think the national average is about 25 to 26%, that's about right. Okay, here's asset prevalence. When you think about who had which assets, if you look at non-parental adult role model and go across there, overall 80% of the kids said they had that asset, that they answered those items to reflect that they did have that asset. And then 72% reflected that they did feel connected to their school. And then that changes slightly across the educational levels, as you can see, with a trend toward more education in the family than the more likelihood of having the asset prevalence. When you look at sexual intercourse, whether or not, and the question we asked was clearly that one, have you ever had sexual intercourse? We wanted, this was the ever, not how often or how many times or with how many partners, though we did ask those as well, but this particular question is the one that we're using here. Overall, 22% of the sample reflected that they had had sexual intercourse, and again, that trend is sort of interesting related to education of the parent, with only 15% when parents had reported having a bachelor's degree or higher, as compared to 23% when both parents had less than a high school education. We use a logistic regression analyses and to look at those two assets and youth age, parent income, education, family structure, and the outcome ever had sexual intercourse. And again, the family structure was one or two parent family. And both of them were related with delay of sexual intercourse. Both of those assets were. But both assets did interact statistically with parental education, which meant that we needed to stratify that and look at that a little bit more closely. So this is the results of that particular analysis. When you look at this overall, you can see how the odds ratios change overall and then across educational area. So for parents, for example, who had a bachelor's degree here, those youth were almost four times as likely to report never having had sex if they had this particular asset compared to youth who had parents with this educational level and who did not report that asset. So we're talking about a clearly protective benefit from reporting, having someone else, some other adult in your life that with whom you can have contact and believe that they care about your well-being. And when you look at school connectedness overall, yes, it was significant, but looking across the categories of education, it was not significant. So that youth in this group, whether they had the school connectedness asset or not, they were as equally likely to report having had sexual intercourse, regardless of whether their parents had this level of education, as compared to it was protective for students in these two groups. Okay, let's see what this means. Well, youth with either asset, then, were significantly less likely to report ever having had sexual intercourse. That means it's really important. If they had it, they were much less likely to have been involved in sexual intercourse. And whether they reported coitarchy, which is a new word for me in the last few years that we've been using, but it means onset of having sexual intercourse, that it means it is more protective in that sense if they have a non-parental adult role model for those who are in the lower levels of socioeconomic status. Now, it may be that we're really talking about similar mechanisms of action here because they both of those assets may simply reflect dimensions of social support. And we know there's a long history of literature of social support, that if you have at least one other human being with whom you can talk about your innermost thoughts and feelings, that's protective for your health, for illness. So to think about that, maybe that is the mechanism that is going on. The other fact that parental education, when you're educated, you hold that value, your children are going to hold that value, you're going to hold that value up to them and that expectation. So once that's in play, that may be a part of the process as well. As I think I've discussed those particular findings there, I did mention also that the children of the most educated parents, school connectedness really was not a factor, and it's possibly the fact that they have resources that can get them to those, those private cheerleading clubs or the dance studios or the private sports leagues if they have family resources. Those are the kinds of things that may be available to them that may end up providing those kinds of asset-based resources that are not named by the ones that we particularly measured. We do have limitations. Every study, no study is perfect. We work really very hard to make this perfect, but it is not. And the fact is that we don't know cause and effect yet, because the data I'm reporting on here is the first of five waves of data. We will be able to talk about that in the future, but we have not completed that data collection. We've not completed the analyses, of course, to look at it longitudinally. The other thing was that the non-parental adult role model asset, it's the Cronbach's alpha, looking at the reliability of that scale was pretty low. And in our original study, it had been quite high. So we are still not sure. We have added items each year in the survey that will help us clarify what that problem was. So we may have a much higher alpha toward the end of the study when we put all those new items in there and make it right, we think. Now, what do you do? given the fact that we don't have complete information, no one has done that longitudinal study so that you can say assets should be done here, they should be taught there, this is how you do it. We don't know that. But given the fact that we are operating under incomplete information, it seems that these two recommendations are reasonable. I think every child needs supporting, caring relationships with adults who are not necessarily in their family. It gives them this broader range of stability and security within a community and a neighborhood and environment, and that's important. And to the degree that we can help that happen, I think we're helping youth find their futures that they want. The fact that every child needs an opportunity to have and participate in those kinds of activities that will develop their talents and abilities, and schools can provide that, and that's a place where kids should be encouraged to develop all of those talents that they have. And we believe that if when you do these things that they're much less likely to engage in sexual activity. Or if they do, and I didn't report this data as well, but they can use birth control and they can use condoms if they have the resources and knowledge and ability to do that, and that clearly is also a part of this work. Are there any questions that you would have about this research? Please. We defined it very specifically as a male inserting his penis in a female's vagina. Those words were right there. And we also said, doing it, going all the way, every way we had ever heard went in that little thing right after. Have you ever had sexual intercourse? And by sexual intercourse, we mean, and then all of the other words that we thought they might have heard. We purposefully did not, and that had a lot to do with our IRB. It was hard enough to get all of this approved. We have been to and begged our IRB to get approval for these kinds of studies, and we're asking kids to say they committed a crime. They've used alcohol, tobacco. I mean, these things are illegal. Sex isn't, but the other things are that we ask them about, and so getting all of this information has been very difficult, and we are in a very conservative environment. We don't want the media to come running down and, oh, what are you encouraging these kids to do by asking them what they're doing? You know, which is the other myth is that if you ask a child about are you having sex, then you're encouraging them to have sex or something. So, yeah, we purposely did not even go there at all. Ours is a neighborhood-based study. We actually use census tracts, and then we found out that, yes, some of the kids do go to charter schools, some go to other schools, and we do have their high schools and their school names that we will be eventually able to go back and look at that impact. The other problem that we have is that on average, some of these kids are moving 5 and 6 times. I mean, we're following them for 5 years, and we're following them to Iraq. We are following them all over the world. It's a difficult process. But, again, we didn't identify them because they went to a particular school. We just identified them from their community-based sample. Sure. Mm-hmm. We should be able to look at that, yes. We'll have, of course, it'll be a small sample, and because we didn't pick it that way, I don't know if we'll have large enough sample size to be able to say anything statistically, but we will be able to comment on that at least. Please. Yes, that's right. Yes. That's right. That's right. We looked at those separately so that we could look at the impact individually. We do have some other studies out there that have been published in which we put everything together and see which ones would come, but this particular one was related just to those areas.
In coming up with your construct, did you use the information about assets developed through search and
We started there, as a matter of fact, and talked to them. We wanted to do some very different things, and as you know, they have 40 development assets, and we actually have a project in the city that they have done. But we needed an instrument that we could use for scientific research that we would have control of, because you have to be able to modify it and do all of that kind of thing. And theirs is not, it's proprietary, so we would not be able to do that. So we had to select our own. Was there one more question? Yes. We do have some of that in the data. We have asked a number of stress questions about the family, about going through a divorce or any of those kinds of things. So we'll get there. It is on the list. We have this huge data set. So if you have some dissertation in progress and you may need some data, call me. We could use the help, I think. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's see. Moving on to our